Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual podcast on Radio MD and iHeartRadio. This is 907B, and we have a wonderful, stimulating guest for you, Dr. Justin Lehmiller, who has written the bestseller, Tell Me What You Want, The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. His website, sexandpsychology.com. He is at, of course, the Center for Sex Research. That is, well, let him tell you where he is. At least I thought you were at the, if you will, the center in Indiana that was known for starting, if you will, sex research, the Kinsey Institute. Dr. Lehmiller, is that where you are?
Correct. I am at the Kinsey Institute.
And so tell us about your research in this book, The Science of Sexual Desire. One of the most interesting thing is, do men and women want the same thing in their, if you will, imaginations or fascinations or fantasies, I guess you'd say?
So for this book, I was interested in learning more about our sexual fantasies, and I surveyed almost 4,200 Americans about their biggest fantasies of all time, as well as hundreds of people, places, and things that they might have ever fantasized about. I also collected data on their demographics, their personality, their sexual history, and all in all, it gave me this unprecedented ability to shed light on what Americans from all walks of life are fantasizing about. So as part of this survey, I did look at how men's and women's sexual fantasies are similar versus different. And what you find is that there's a lot of overlap in terms of the things that we're fantasizing about. A lot of the desires that we think of as stereotypically male, such as, say, threesomes and group sex, are things that the vast majority of women are fantasizing about as well. And a lot of the things that people would stereotype as being more feminine desires, things like emotional need fulfillment, we see that most men are fantasizing about that as well. Certainly, there are some differences in terms of how frequently we fantasize about things. Say, men have multi-partner sex fantasies a little more often than women do, but there's actually a lot of commonality and overlap in terms of what we desire.
Let's first go back in the realm. How satisfied are men or women with their current sex life?
So on average, people report being satisfied with their sex lives, but that doesn't mean that they're getting exactly what they want. It doesn't mean that they're as satisfied as they could potentially be. So I asked people about their biggest sex fantasies of all time and whether or not they wanted to act on them, and the vast majority, about 80%, said that they do. However, only about 1 in 5 had ever acted on their fantasies. So there's a big gap between what people say they want and then what they're actually doing. One of the things I argue for in the book is that to the extent that people can talk more about their desires and potentially act on more of them, they might be able to further increase their sexual satisfaction.
And one of the things I see, I do a lot of what is called executive health, and a lot of non-executive health patients who are elderly or getting, I guess you'd call it, in middle to late middle age. And I'm always surprised at the number that are no longer having any sexual relationships with their partner. That is, I would guess 50% of men and women over the age of 60 are not having sex with their partner or with anyone anymore. Is that typical? I'm wondering if it's getting higher than the reports from 20 and 30 years ago now, maybe because we're, if you will, more obese or more something. Or is that relatively typical?
It's relatively typical in the sense that we do see that in the data, that as people get older, that their sex lives tend to slow down a bit. And for many long-term couples in marital relationships, their sex lives become non-existent. I think the statistic I've seen is that about 1 in 7 marriages in the U.S. are sexless, but that's looking overall, not based on certain age groups. And the percentage who are sexless certainly gets higher as people are older. I think a big part of that is just that as we're involved in these long-term relationships, we tend to get bored with our sex lives. And we may also have certain stereotypes about sex and aging that prevent us from continuing to enjoy a healthy sex life. So I think there's a lot that we can do to try and help encourage people to have a more lifelong sexuality in a way that's satisfying to them and can help them maintain a happier relationship over time.
Now, we should ask you, how did you get into this field? That is, what were your, you did, give us a little bit of your history. I know where you started, but go ahead and tell us your history.
Sure. So I went to graduate school to get my PhD in social psychology at Purdue, and I went to study the psychology of romantic relationships, and in particular to do research on what drives commitment to relationships and what makes a good relationship last. And while I was there studying this, I got assigned to be a teaching assistant for a human sexuality course, and that opened up my eyes to this whole world of sex research. And I was really perplexed because I was studying romantic relationships, but no one was talking about sex. And it was this really big oversight to me, it seemed, that how relationship researchers could be studying relationships without studying sex. So that's what sort of initially inspired me to make sexuality a big part of my research program, is because there just isn't nearly enough of it in so many questions that are unanswered.
And one of the things that when I've looked back at the literature, and I'm not talking about your book, but other literature on what makes a successful marriage, it is having similar values, having similar, that is, social values, having similar financial values and goals. And the third is having similar sexual values. How did you find, has that been true in what you've looked at? In other words, is it sex, financial, and social values that allow couples to stay together, or is that just my misunderstanding of the literature?
I think you're right in the sense that those are the three sources, the three most common sources of conflict in relationships. So whenever partners are discrepant on one of those values, there's likely to be problems long term. And when it comes to the sexual values in particular, the real issue there is that people have a really hard time talking about sex. And so they don't tend to address those issues, and they just sort of fester and build up over time, where you've got both partners who aren't getting what they want, and they're not getting what they want because they can't talk about sex.
How do you break that disconnect, if you will? How do you start the conversation?
Right, and what you really want to do ideally is to open those lines of sexual communication early on in the relationship, because the longer you wait to start talking about sex, the more awkward and difficult it can become. But if you've been in a relationship for a long time and you don't have that really strong sexual communication, it's all about finding safe ways and non-threatening ways to start to introduce the topic. And there are lots of different ways you can do this, whether it's watching a steamy movie together and then talking about it afterwards, or playing a sexy or romantic game together. There are all kinds of little icebreakers you can do to kind of open those initial lines of communication. It just takes a little bit of effort.
And when you looked at it, how many people were, what percent of people were making the effort? And how do we, I think it's such an important part of relationships in general. How do you get more to do this, if you will, on a societal level?
Mm-hmm. So about half of my participants had shared their biggest fantasy of all time with a romantic partner. And what I found is that the people who were talking about their fantasies and their desires were the most sexually satisfied. They were the most satisfied with their relationships. And a big part of that is because when you're engaging in this act of self-disclosure, it's building trust and intimacy in the relationship. So there's a lot of potential there for you to improve your relationship just by talking about your desires, even if you're not necessarily going to act on them. You know, just because you have a fantasy or you share it doesn't mean you have to go the extra step and act on it. That's up to you and your partner to decide whether you want to go the extra mile there. But I think a big thing we can do on a societal level to promote more of this conversation and discussion about sex is to rethink our approach to sex education, where the only sexual communication skill we currently teach students is just say no. And that's not setting them up with the skills they need to develop healthy and satisfying relationships for the long haul, where they're going to need to be able to talk about sex.
So now that brings up a tremendously interesting point. How do you change? In other words, this is a long-term change in society that's needed. I mean, in other words, you know, I don't think we can change, if you will, sex education all of a sudden across America. What should we be doing? In other words, what should the average person be doing? The person listening to this podcast, who obviously probably isn't average, but if they consider themselves average, what should they be doing to change their relationships, if you will?
Well, one thing I would add about sex education is that it's mostly governed on a local level. So if people do want to get involved in changing sex education, it's getting involved in your local school board and going and learning what students are learning about in school and then making your suggestions and recommendations. So there is a way that we can all get involved in promoting better sex education, and that's at the local level. But in terms of in your own relationship, how you can promote better sexual communication, it's really just starting to break down those barriers to communication and allowing yourself to start talking about your desires. And one of the ways that starts is you got to come to terms with your own desires first. You have to feel comfortable with yourself before you can start sharing your desires with someone else. And that's one of the things that I try to do in my book, is to help normalize your desires and realize that you're not alone in having them. And that first step of self-acceptance, I think, is really important for getting to the point where you can start sharing your desires with a partner.
We're talking with Justin Lehmiller, Lehmiller, who's written this book, Tell Me What You Want. It's probably a book that husband and wife or partners should read almost together and then talk to each other about. His website is Sex and Psychology, S-E-X-A-N-D, and Psychology, P-S-Y, you can spell it, C-H-O-L-O-G-Y.com. And Justin has written this sensational book, Tell Me What You Want. And if you will, the subtitle is The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. Justin, one of the common questions I imagine is, say someone's been married and they're 20 years into their marriage, if you will, and they've never talked about this before and they don't know how to broach their sexual fantasies with each other. What do they and they're worried about their sexual fantasy being very different than their partner's. How do they go about this? Do you say, let's schedule a time to talk about this, or what do you do?
Right. So a good way to start is to pick a good time and place to have a conversation about desire. So you don't want to do this out at a restaurant or another public setting where other people might be able to overhear. Make sure that you do it in a place where you're private and free of distraction. So turn off the cell phones and, you know, maybe pour a glass of wine and just, you know, start working up to that conversation about desire and start by sharing your your tamer desires. You know, you don't have to jump into the really adventuresome stuff right away. Think of this as a process, an ongoing discussion, and there's plenty of time for you to share your fantasies. But start out with the tamer ones that you think your partner is more likely to be on board with. The good news is that most people have multiple fantasies, and there's probably going to be a lot of overlap in terms of what you and your partner both desire.
We're talking with the author of Tell Me What You Want, The Science of Sexual Desire, and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. So now you've been doing this for a number of years. What surprises you most about the field of research into sex and romantic desires?
There are a lot of surprising things. I think one thing that surprises me as someone who is in this field is how much appetite there is for the work that we do publicly, but how little funding there is to actually study any aspect of human sexuality unless you're studying sexually transmitted diseases. What we really need is grant funding to be able to study the positive side of sex, all of the great and wonderful things that sex can do for us. It can be good for our health, our mental health. There's some really interesting new research I've seen showing that older adults who maintain a more active sex life actually have better memories. So there might be some benefits there for our brains. So we could really use more research looking at the positive side of sex rather than always getting hung up on the negative.
I guess that might be true in almost, if I asked researchers in probably every field, they would say there's even those in the fields where there's plenty of money, meaning there's lots of money, but not excess money. I mean, it's not going begging, if you will, that I suppose everybody would say we need more money in the field, but there is very little going into sexual research. Is that because it's almost a taboo to talk about fantasies and sexual fantasies in public, or why is that, do you think?
Absolutely. It's so politically controversial. And for this very reason, the fact that you can't get money for it and it's controversial, I know a lot of sex researchers who have picked up and moved to Canada because the climate for sex research there is so much more favorable, and you can get money there to do a variety of sex studies. And particularly people who study the physiology of human sexual response, you just really can't do that in the United States. I only know one person who's really doing that in the U.S. today. So there's actually been this exodus of sex researchers to other countries out of the U.S. As a result of the politics of sex research and it being
so. It's a good thing we don't have tariffs on sex researchers, eh? We're talking with Justin Lehmiller. Sexandpsychology.com is the website. It's a wonderfully fascinating book. Tell Me What You Want, The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. If you have a partner, start with a glass of wine talking about sex in a private area. And I guess that's how you do it. You've got to actually talk about it and be frank and honest about it. Justin, thanks very much. I suppose the last question we'll ask you is, how do you know that your partner is being honest with you?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the only way you can do that is by making sure you've built up the trust and intimacy in your relationship so that you can put yourself in that position of vulnerability to really share your desires and your true self with your partner. So if you want to get to the point where you're actually sharing your desires, your relationship has to be in a really good place to begin with, where you've built up that trust and intimacy and communication. And once you get there, then you can trust that your partner is going to be honest with you.
Justin, thanks very, very much for talking with us today. And thank you for downloading. This is 907B of the You, the Owner's Manual podcast. Thanks very much for downloading us. Do rate us. Justin, thank you for appearing with us. The book is Tell Me What You Want, sexandpsychology.com. And Ben, thanks for wonderful engineering. We'll be back next week with another unusual, outstanding guest who also can help you live at the top of your curve till very near the end. Thanks again.